This is Giving Purpose Podcast, highlighting Bay Area nonprofits and the work they do to better our communities.
Hello and welcome to Giving Purpose Podcast, where we highlight San Francisco Bay Area nonprofits and the work they do to better our communities. This is your host, Ana Pimentel Calero, with co-host Joe Neto, and we are very excited to have you listening in and would like to introduce you to our guest. But first, Joe, how's it going today? Do you have any ties to our guest today or anything in that sense?
Well, I do, actually. I actually ran into Local Color at a downtown San Jose event last year. Can't remember what it was exactly. It was like a sidewalk kind of event near the tank, Shark Tank. And I wanted to go out, and nobody in my family wanted to go out with me. But I did talk my daughters into it. You know, I like taking them out and showing them a little bit of culture. And they had a great time. They loved the art workshop or installation that you all were doing, that Local Color was doing out there at the time. And I was intrigued by it. And at that time, we had already talked about doing a podcast based on nonprofits. So I was kind of circling around, gathering up, you know, potential guests, cards and contacts of that sort. But for me, what intrigued me about Local Color is learning more about them is the work that they do around town, downtown San Jose. You've probably driven by stuff and seen their work and maybe not realized it. I come from the 1980s, so I'm big with hip-hop culture in downtown San Jose specifically. I wanted to be a New York City Breaker, but I was nowhere close to that. I was more like Pee-wee Herman dancing. But I always had this other thing, part of hip-hop culture is clothing, music, and art. And, we all thought we were New York Breakers and New York Bombers on the subway and stuff like that, but we were nowhere near that. But we did hang around the Guadalupe River and tried underneath, I can't get arrested for it now. We did try to spray paint and make little pieces, but they were very elementary. So, but that's what really intrigued me about Local Color is that they're pulling local artists, putting in these great pieces around town that I want to learn more about, So let's learn more about our guest.
All right, that sounds great. Aaron Salazar is the executive director and founder of Local Color, formerly the Exhibition District. Salazar has led many public art and advocacy projects, including murals totaling 30,000 square feet of vertical space, and opened a 20,000 square foot creative haven called Local Color in downtown San Jose. Aaron is an artist, idea machine, muralist, seamstress, community organizer, and a public art curator.
Covered all the bases there.
Pretty much. But I would love to hear from Aaron. So Aaron, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and what Local Color does?
Sure can. Hello, I'm Aaron Salazar. I serve as Local Color's executive director. It's an organization that I founded back in 2015, and I've had the total honor of serving as her executive director for the last 9 years, which is crazy to me because I started out as an artist and a bartender, and it's just kind of wild to look back on it and think about how much we've done since then. So more about myself. I'm 5'2". I like pina coladas and getting caught in the rain. I'm an artist. I'm a painter by trade. And I came here to San Jose back in 2005 when I was 17. I'm a first-generation college student, and I moved up here to go to college and really sort of pave the way for my family. Got my degree here, attended bar here, started a nonprofit here, fallen in love here, and I really love this area. It's been a home for me for the last 17 years, so now I've been here about as long as I haven't.
San Jose, what drew you to San Jose? And was it San Jose specifically? Do you want to go on?
Yeah, no, this is kind of funny. So I'm an overachiever, and I'm a teacher's pet, and when I was in high school, I was in this class called AVID, which was the advancement via individual determination. And it was to take first-generation college students and squeeze them through the pipeline of getting into college. And so they had the UC system and the Cal State system. and I wasn't going to go to a research school like a UC. I wanted something that was a little more practical for me. And I really wanted to do art because nobody was telling me, I should be a doctor, or I should be a lawyer, or I should get a business degree, which was awesome. As a brat and a former brat, that was really awesome for me to not have anybody tell me where to go. I picked San Jose because it was far enough away from my hometown that I did not have to go back every weekend, but was close enough that I could get there if I needed to, if there was an emergency. But really, it's because I liked that San Jose State University was called San Jose State University and not Cal State University San Jose. And when I visited, it was sunny and cosmopolitan. I'd never seen a city like that. So then when I was here, I really got to experience cities that were cosmopolitan and exotic and stuff like that. And then I learned we have a lot of way to go to make San Jose and the greater Santa Clara County a little closer to my dream and the ideal here.
That's a great story. I mean, we're Spartans ourselves, so
old alma mater.
Yeah, this came out of being at San Jose State, this podcast. So
always great to see another San Jose State alum. So you're the founder of Local Color. So what made you want to start your own nonprofit? Because essentially, right, you talked about how you were drawn to San Jose. You love San Jose. What made you want to start the nonprofit?
I was after college. After I got my degree, I have my Bachelor of Fine Arts in studio practice. And again, I was bartending. I don't know why that's such an important thing to say, but it feels relevant. So I was bartending and I was getting a lot of mural gigs in bars and restaurants around downtown San Jose. And through getting all these gigs, I knew a bunch of the industry people, right? I'm a bartender and I was a pretty fun bartender to boot. So I started to meet all these industry people in food and bev, and they would ask me to come into their bars and do murals. And so I was like, they're like, we can't pay you, but we'll give you free food and credit for any beer you want from here up to $2,000. And I was like, oh, yeah, this is what's up. And so it was sort of during the same time that I became unhoused. And so I was living in this warehouse that was an 800 square foot room with a sink, and I was kind of squatting there. I wasn't allowed to live there, and so I was like, well, yeah, anything I can do to secure a little food seems like a really smart idea. And so I kept getting so many of these gigs coming at me because they were like, oh, that's the girl that does the murals, you should have her do murals in your bar and restaurant. And I was like, yeah, stack them up. It got too much. I also had a bartend. I needed to actually pay my rent on this studio that I was living, squatting in. And so I started to give out these mural gigs to my other friends because I have the academic background of being formally trained as a painter. I was living in the warehouse and meeting all these graffiti people, and it was just this perfect storm of meeting artists of such a wide discipline that I started handing out these jobs to people. Boom. Hey, go over to this bar, paint this mural. And then I'd get call from clients, and the clients would be like, we have not heard from your artist, so what's up with that? And I'd be like, I don't know. Let me give them a call. And I'd call these artists, and they'd be like, well, I don't know what an invoice is, and I don't know how much to charge for this, and I don't have insurance. I don't even have health insurance, nonetheless, some sort of certificate of insurance for these, to do these murals. And I was like, oh, that's okay. Hey, cut me off 10% of your mural gig, and I will just, help you figure this stuff out. And then I was like, wait a minute. I think that this is a job. So I started looking into starting a nonprofit organization, and with the help of a couple others, finally got our 501c3 status. And really the goal was just to make sure that artists got paid for the works that they do that beautify the community. And so after I started filing all this paperwork or getting things in order, I met with the program director of the Knight Foundation. And I was so salty and I was so punk rock that I didn't want to go to a stupid networking event. I was like, this is not me. This is not my people. I don't network it's not my thing. Now it's like all I do. But I don't network. And I was like, fine, I'll go, but I'm not changing. I'm wearing the clothes I'm wearing. And I had just gotten off a mural site. So I was in my jumpsuit and I was all dirty and painty. And I was like salty too, to boot. And so the program director came up to me and he was like, I want to know what you think about San Jose's art community. And I was like, I think we need more murals because I look outside and everything is ugly and brown and beige. We went down this list of naming Tan Jose and Vanilla Con Valley and 50 Shades of Beige. And I just kept going down this list. And it was like, if I had enough energy to be like, to poke fun at it, then I had enough energy to do something about it. So I got granted my first $10,000 for 3 murals. And then those 3 murals, I was like, well, that's $3,000 each. That doesn't seem like enough if we're going to ask somebody to be out here for, you know, a couple weeks taking time off work. They got families and stuff like that. So I held my first fundraiser. I asked artists to donate work, and then we started the bid at whatever they needed to take home from that piece. And I raised an extra $5,000 through my very first, pretty, pretty shoestring fundraiser situation at Cafe Stritch, RIP. And then I was like, 15,000, I can work with 15,000. So that was sort of how I kicked off starting the nonprofit. And, you know, I just saw a need for artists to be organized. I'm a Virgo and a Leo. I'm on the cusp and I'm the worst of both worlds. So I was like, if I put my powers together, I think I can help people. I think I can help artists. Yeah.
That's a great story. And yeah, the bartending definitely comes into matters, because bars are a great place for artists to meet other people and get what came out of that is you got these commissioned pieces, you know?
Essentially, it's like a networking.
It was early networking. Yeah, it was early networking. Pre-networking, before networking was networking, yeah.
So you talked a little bit about, at the end, supporting local artists. Can you go a little bit more into detail just about the mission of Local Color?
I sure can. So we recently went through a strategic planning process, and initially, I was like, oh, God, I don't need a strategic plan. I don't need funding for a strategic plan. I need unrestricted operating capital. That's what I need. I need money to do whatever I want to do. But we applied for this grant. We didn't get it. They gave us this consolation grant, or I thought of it at the time as a consolation grant. And I was like, fine, I guess we'll do a strategic plan, whatever that is. So I really dragged my feet about it. And the funding was to hire a consultant to help us build out what would become the future, sort of today, of Local Color. And one of the first things that he did was this consultant did stakeholder interviews. So he like interviewed artists we work with and board members and past board members and staff and past staff. And the first thing he says to me when we get back after these stakeholder interviews, he goes, Aaron, I hate to tell you this, you're not an arts nonprofit. And I was like, oh no, we hired the wrong consultant if he doesn't think we're an arts nonprofit. But then he was like, you're an artist's nonprofit. And my head exploded. I started sobbing. It was a whole thing, because really that's what it's about for me and for us. Like, the art happens, the art will happen, but it's a result of a well cared for community. And so just to hear that flip of, we're not an arts organization, we're an artist's organization, was like mind blowing for me. So then we started to build our new mission, vision, values. And so our mission as it stands right now is that our mission is to build equitable pathways for creatives to thrive. That's it.
I just got chills listening to this. And because, we kind of came to this realization about this podcast, you know, which started off as a grad school project. And now it's like we're learning so much about nonprofits and the work that they're doing. And it's amazing. I mean, your story is a testament to that. You know, it's the mind blowing is just, I was just like, yes, I know that realization of when you're going after something and you're right there. And then all of a sudden the real purpose hits you right in the face and you don't even expect it.
I was gobsmacked. It was such an epiphany just to have somebody tell me what my organization was. And I'm like, you can't tell me what my organization is. I built this organization. And then Nelson's all, you're an artist's organization. And then I just like the waterworks. It was such an epiphany. That's the only way I can really state it. So yeah, that's our organization. We are we're not a woman-powered organization anymore because we just hired Brandon. And so now we say,
I guess we'll hire him.
Well, you had to diversify, you know? You can't just be all women, all women of color. We used to say that we are a woman-powered organization building equitable pathways for artists to thrive. But now we say we're a woman-powered and Brandon organization building equitable pathways for artists to thrive.
You know what? I really love that. That's kind of like at our house. My husband is always... he's always the odd man out because my daughter and I just vote against him. I'm like, sorry, buddy.
That's solidarity.
Yeah, you kind
of. That's
have
the
to.
Power of women working together.
Right. Well, I mean, I feel Brandon myself. I mean, you know, this podcast is definitely women powered, with a little sprinkle of Joe in there. So, but I give credit to, you know, I look for women powered programs, organizations, businesses. I like to show my daughters how women leaders are. I did a film, and I had my assistant director was a young lady who actually became one of my closest friends through this experience. And I kept telling my daughters on how incredible she was as a leader. And when they met her, they're like, Dad, you know, I could see them like deers in the headlight, you know, really making a difference in their lives and showing them that anything is possible, you know?
Because it is. Anything is possible.
It is the truth.
Yeah,
right?
And it'll happen if you just keep going. Just commit to something and keep doing it for 9 years till your hair goes gray a little bit. And
or a lot of
it. Or a lot of it.
So you did talk about, you know, you do have specific experience in the field that you're working in and the community you're working in as well. I mean, you went to San Jose State. You live in San Jose. But you also talked about kind of a little bit of the challenge of, you know, you were an artist and you still are, but you had to do kind of the administration side. How do you think, or do you have any comments on the other side of nonprofits where the administration and besides the fact of the work you're doing in the community and how that shift has really impacted the nonprofit?
Thank you for that question. I think that art has made me braver as an administrator because I went through the whole rigmarole of art school where they critique you till you cry. And, you know, it's just, I've been through so much already in my little life that there is nothing scary about finance. There's nothing scary about paperwork or filing 990s. You know, like these are all things that are... They're easier once you have like a grasp on if you can throw some color on a canvas, you can certainly file some paperwork. And a lot of people don't believe that to be true inside of themselves, but my goal is to show them that it's possible to use art as a vehicle, as an intersectional vehicle to make your life the best that it possibly can. So I think from an administrative side, it's taken a lot for me to really like pull up my big girl pants and file the stupid paperwork and learn about stupid finance. We were just talking about this, but finance is not my favorite thing, I guess. But it is kind of now, you know, and I think coming from a background with a studio arts degree and as a bartender, I didn't really have a lot of that like business acumen or anything like that. So in 2022, I got accepted into the University of Pennsylvania's School of Policy and School of Social Policy and Practice, and I finished my master's in nonprofit leadership. So I had to take like data analysis and like funder journey and like all of these like courses that really gave me like a substantial nonprofit backbone. It was like an MBA, but for social good, I guess. Yeah. So I it's taken a lot for me to really had to dig deep through a lot of those classes just to show up right, you know, just to be the administrator that I want to be. And that feels like such a deeply dorky thing to say and to have headphones on and listen to myself say, just be like, I am an administrator, you know, I'm an arts admin.
But that's incredible. And that's, I think, something that we want to highlight on this podcast is that, you know, there are incredible work that's being done in the community, but there is kind of that administration side and the difficulties mm-hmm. with that, especially if it's not a nonprofit that's been around for a really long time. And I mean, you founded it. And so just highlighting that, I think, is important for our listeners to really understand and kind of like you said, I mean, I didn't even know that you could get an MBA in, you know, with a background of nonprofits. Like, I didn't know that. But that's incredible that you
brought. It's cool. And apparently they just put social in front of all the normal classes. So it's like social finance, social marketing, social fundraising. You know, it's, they just put social in front of everything and they repackage it and teach it to the people who are like, I can't do this. So.
Yeah, I think it's important, too, for our listeners to understand, you know, if they're thinking about starting a nonprofit, that it's more than just a thought and a mission. It is the administrative side, which I commend you because I have a small business myself, and I hate paperwork, and I hate doing my taxes and all that stuff. It's just such in my mind. I mean, I'm exhausted from it right now because I just finished all that stuff. And I mean, maybe I have to get some pointers from you. But
I always think about how, like, when people are like, I want to start a nonprofit because I love judo, you know, and I'm just like, don't, you'll never get to do judo again.
Right.
Because it's like, you have to be as in love with the administrative side of doing it. And, you have to love it both. When I was just getting started in nonprofit and I was talking to my big brother and I was like, Troy, I think I'm going to start a nonprofit for arts. And he was like, well, you know what they say about, you know, we come from a little bit of a redneck town. He's like, you know what they say about doing something you love? And I was like, what do they say, Troy? I'm dying to know. He goes, it means deciding what flavor of shit you would like to sample. And I was like, is it going to get bleeped?
Okay. Not necessarily.
Okay. But then, you know, just in hearing him say that back to me, it really is. Like, it's like all jobs come with the other side of it, right? Nonprofits are no different, and
especially when it's a passion job, you know. You don't think about it. You think about the glory and how great it's going to be, and then there is a whole pile over there for you to chew on. So
and then there's the business side.
Right Speaking of business side, we learned a lot about you. Now let's get to learn a little more about Local Color. There's a definition for your name, the term Local Color, on your website, and the first definition reads: noun, the customs, manner of speech, dress, or other typical features of a piece or period that contribute to its particular character. I love how you adopted this term as your name and its description. In your work with local artists from different areas, how does this play into Local Color's mission? And some follow-up questions with that are, what are some of San Jose's artistic characteristics, and are there any significant influences on these cultural elements in Local Color's work?
Yes. Yes is the short answer there. The cool thing about Local Color is that it has a dual meaning, right? The first one, as you said, is like the idiosyncrasies and the manner of dress and the customs. So you go to Seattle or something like that, and you go out and you get a little taste of the local color. You get the coffee, you get the tattoo, you get you go get some local color. But the other definition there is, as I first learned it in art, it is the color of a thing, very specific, the color of a thing unaffected by the colors around it. So when I think about local color, it's the macro, right? It's the idiosyncrasies and the manner of dress. It's the how the community presents itself, but it's also the micro. And so it's the thing unaffected by the colors around it. And I love that it just has this depth and breadth to it that is just like, it's a dynamic term that I love so much. And so when I think about how local artists from different areas and diverse backgrounds play into the mission, I think back to our vision. And so we envision cities where all artists, and specifically artists and communities of color, see themselves, hear themselves, and feel themselves reflected back into their community as honored pillars of the cultural landscape. So that's what we imagine like brilliant cities to be. And I think that one thing San Jose has is such an eclectic and diverse community. We say it all the time. We hear it all the time. We feel it, you know, in the communities. We hear languages that are unfamiliar. Sometimes I hear a language and I'm like, I don't even know what that is. And I feel like I have I'm not going to tout being like some sort of linguist or anything, but, you know, I feel like I could tell. And I'm just like, I don't know what that is. And I don't know what kind of person that is. And I like the idea of being surprised by the different cultures that come up. And I think art plays a strong connection to connecting people to place. So the more that we're working with local artists, and they all have diverse backgrounds. They come from diverse cultures, and they're a reflection of the people coming from other parts of the United States or the world. They're a reflection of the global population, right? So when artists are able to represent themselves and their cultures in public art or whatever that might look like, I think other people begin to build a sense of home. They begin to see themselves reflected in their communities, right? Because it's sort of representative of the global population. So in short, it highly plays into Local Color's mission. And that's why we think working with a diverse subset of artists is grounds people here, even people who are not traditionally artists. They're visiting, or they're just hanging out here, or they're here to make a bunch of money and then take it back home where their money goes far. whatever brings people to this area, if they start to see themselves reflected in their streets and in their art, then they're going to connect with the city more fully and more wholly. So, yeah, I just think art connects people to place. And so whether that's the artist painting the murals or the people enjoying them, it does that.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some of the artwork, and I'm drawn into it. And being as a San Jose native as I am, I mean, I see a reflection of who I am in a lot of the work that you've done out there. You know, I see a lot of familiarity it makes me feel at home.
Good.
You know?
Then it's working.
It's working, most definitely. I told a little story about this earlier. I ran into Local Color at a sidewalk event held in downtown San Jose last summer while looking for some community events to take my daughters to. Now, you had some easels set up with local artists set up at each canvas. How are these artists chosen for these events, and how does a local artist get commissioned to participate in your event?
It depends on the event, and it depends on the kind of thing that we're doing. But we have an artist intake form where you can submit a little bit about you, about your creative practice, and some examples of your work. And then we review that like every 3 months or something like that when we have a different call for artists. So our goal is to build pathways, our mission, right, DERP, is to build equitable pathways for creatives to thrive. And that includes both emerging and established artists. So a lot of emerging artists, they haven't had it's like when they're looking for a job right out of college and they're like, you need to have 10 years of experience. And you're like, how? Right. Yeah. You can't get like a big mural gig without having like a little bit of painting experience or a little bit of mural experience. So we try to work, depending on the type of event it is, if it's like a live painting thing, you know, we sort of try to reserve those for sort of newcomers, you know, emerging artists, to really get them prepped for getting their big masterpiece up on a bigger wall. So a lot of times we're working with emerging artists. Sometimes people drop out and we have to tap the five artists that we that I know are available. So it's sort of a mix between working with people that we know can get the job done, working with new people and getting them in some sort of creative pipeline, some sort of working pipeline. So, yeah, that's sort of how we get those artists, is we pick from a big pile of intake forms and examples of artwork and try to make sure that there's enough space for emerging artists too.
Yeah, so I know you get commissioned to do murals and stuff of that mm-hmm. sort, but at like an event like this, and these artists are painting a piece, are those pieces auctioned off, maybe money for the artist and maybe a little bit for Local Color? Are they auctioned off at the end of the event?
Those ones in particular, I think, are just hanging in a warehouse right now. We wouldn't auction something off without like an express consent from the artist and some sort of meaningful split. So right now, I think those are just on display in a warehouse, which is pretty cool. But those pieces, sometimes they get rolled up, sometimes they get repurposed, sometimes they get donated. We've had like live art be put into James Lick, elementary schools, junior highs, and stuff like that. So sometimes these pieces will be donated to beautify communities and things like that. Some not often do they get auctioned. We have a specific auction that we auction things off at, so it's rare that they would get auctioned. But, you know, we'd consider things like raffles, or if they wanted to sell them, too. Like, we buy all the materials. If they wanted to roll that bad boy up and sell it, then, like, good on you.
Well, yeah. I think your answer beats what I asked. I mean, that's a great cause. I mean, taking that artwork and beautifying another place locally. The values of local color are listed as being home, responsibility, access to art, connect, and equality. Local color shows a clear devotion to local community and diversity. Sometimes as a volunteer or a donor, it's hard to find an organization that you can feel comfortable participating with on a regular basis. Could you explain local color's values to our audience to give them a flavor of what to expect when volunteering with your organization?
Sure thing, yeah. Okay, so home, item one. These are also, they are correct. So I did have to double check with the website because we just did the strategic plan. I'm innocent here. You know, we just changed everything up, so I don't know. These ones are accurate. So home just represents that we believe in experimental spaces and experimental places that help ground us all in a better sense of home and create public spaces that feel more relevant and valid for the people who are living and working and visiting and breathing here. Responsibility is a big one for us. We believe in transparency and responsibility, and that comes in the form of being fiscally responsible, of course, is our duty, but also being responsible for doing our due diligence when it comes to selecting artists for pieces, when it comes to deciding where art goes, and then ensuring that, like, for example, every project we do with, like, a Google or a Zoom or something like that, we take 5% off the top of every project and we put it in a self-reserved fund that we just call our public art fund. So we don't believe that murals should just go to the people who can afford them and then the places that can afford them. So we have this little subpot of funds that is off to the side that we use to fund underfunded projects when it comes to like Title I schools or playgrounds or things like that, because, you know, if it only went to the people who can afford it, then the rest of us wouldn't have any beautiful art. And then when it comes to access to art, we really believe that art in public spaces, to me, I think public art is the highest form of art because of its accessibility, right? You don't have to pay an admission fee. You don't have to be dressed well enough to walk through a gallery. You don't have to be anything in order to access public art. So this is another value of ours, that we really believe that public art is a connection between people and place and helps root people in places. You even think when you go to like other cities and stuff like that, me personally, I mean, I'm super biased too. Like, I always look at art everywhere else. But you go to other cities, you're like, look at that cool mural and look at that cool statue and look at that cool architecture. Like, outside of like food, I don't know what else anybody's taking pictures of, you know? So it really does help define a cultural and visual landscape, public art, that is. We believe in connections. So we share transparently with all of our artists. We help connect them to projects, even if we aren't the ones that are facilitating or curating it. So we just try to do our best to share resources and knowledge and network and wealth to the very best of our ability. And then the last one is equality, is that we believe that all people should have access to art and all ideas can be represented in a meaningful way. Yeah, so that's my abridged version of what our values as I remember them.
Well, great answers all around. Yeah, it looks like, I mean, I've definitely been hanging around downtown a lot more, you know, in the time that I've kind of moved back into my schooling there. And I've seen so many murals pop up over the last 10 years, where before you were talking earlier, where it was Tan Jose,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's really exciting to walk down, you know, First Street and see a piece up on, you know, a wall that might be just like the border to a construction zone or something of that sort, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Congrats on your, you know, sharing in that realm, you know, and your jobs that you're doing there. I'm asking this next question on behalf of my young daughters, as I'm always eager to point out women leadership and positions to them. And I talked about this a little bit earlier again. We love to see strong women leadership, and that seems to be a cornerstone of local color. What are some of the opportunities that Local Color creates to empower women to find or create leadership qualities within themselves, within your organization, and or within the community?
Well, we're a woman-powered and Brandon organization, so that's one way is that, like, we don't specifically look to hire just women. They just sometimes have the administrative backbone that we need to make the organization run. And, you know, because we do tout ourselves as a women-powered organization and Brandon, it attracts more women that want to be a part of our workspace and want to be a part of a team that really values sensitivity and tenderness and warmth and communication and kindness, and nobody's like mean to each other, you know. And if somebody needs to take a day off, then you take a day off, you know. We know that we're people, right? And that it's really important to be people, and that comes with a certain amount of needing to tap out from time to time. So we are really trying to build up sort of a leadership pipeline within our organization. We celebrate women all year round, and not just during Women's History Month, but we are also, I guess I can say that we are being recognized tomorrow by Ash Kalara, state representative, we won the Leadership in the Arts Award for Women's History Month. So,
oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I want to be on stage with like an Emmy or something. I don't think they gave you an Emmy, but I am practicing.
You might be on the parade, right?
My princess wave.
I have to say, you got to practice the wave.
I know.
No, that's remarkable and excellent. And congratulations to you and your organization. I mean, these are the things that, you know, not necessarily strive for, but kind of, you know, solidify everything that you're doing. You know, you're making a difference.
Yeah, it feels that way. It certainly feels that way when that email comes across your desk. You know, like one day you're just like, ugh, so sick of doing this. And it's like a tough day. And then all of a sudden you get this email. You know, it's high goods and it's low bads sometimes.
Yeah.
But, you know, I like the dynamic nature personally.
Yeah, you know, sometimes the individual goals and champions of an individual effort is cool. But, you know, to have everything, your whole organization recognizes something special is definitely remarkable. I know I get a good feeling when, you know, that ever happens to me, which I'm trying to think if it ever happened. No.
You get a Women's Leadership Award.
Not presented yet.
To Joe.
Well, I was hoping that you'd get a job with y'all because you didn't get to add and Joe, too, because I love your philosophy on sometimes I'm here and I'm like, I just want to go take a nap. And I'm sure if I was working with Erin, she'd go, Joe, go take a nap.
Yeah, we've got we have our favorite nap spots all throughout the studios where we go. I like, personally, I'm an under the pool table kind of napper. So, yeah, there's a couple different spaces.
Well, I hope my boss isn't listening to this, but I got a spot right underneath my desk where I put the boxes all around because I kind of a lot of studio
soundproof
equipment, but, you know. Yeah.
But it's the humane part that you're talking about, really. And it's like we're all humans and we all have rough days or good days, and it's just working together. And that's what I feel like Local Color does, and with our artists too. And that's probably why you guys are just such a great organization.
Communication is really key here. You know, just tell me if you're having a bad day. That's all. That's all it takes. I'll take your meetings.
Understanding.
And be gentle with me when I need a day off too, please.
Yeah, easy peasy.
Well,
I'm going to dig in a little bit more to some of the stuff that you are doing and offer right here for creatives out there. Could you describe what a studio membership entails and where your facilities are located?
Sure, yeah. This is I'm not allowed to have favorite programs, but if I did, it would be the Artist in Residence program, our studio membership program. Local Color has four projects or four main programs that we do. The first one I talked a little bit about was about our public art program, where we are building economic opportunities for artists. We make sure that every artist gets paid for the work that they do that beautifies the community. But then in 2016, I was getting picked up for a lot of fellowships. It's like once they know that you're like interested in being a leader, these fellowship people can smell you like a mile away. And they're like, we're going to get her in our fellowship and we're going to make her a better person. And I resisted that for a long time, but now I'm a better person having done it. And in one of these fellowships, they were teaching me to define my community through its assets and not its deficits. And I was like, whoa, that's what I'm doing with the murals already. If I got enough energy to be pissed off about a blank wall, I've got enough energy to do something about it. And I had a lot of energy to be mad about vacant spaces that were blighting and polluting our city. And if I have the energy to be angry about it, I got the energy to do something about it. So in 2016, I started the Artist in Residence program, where we opened up a 20,000 square foot space, which was a Ross Dress for Less. And we turned it into affordable studio spaces and a community center. And we rocked on that space for a long time. They would not give us anything more than a month-to-month lease, because it was like gonna get torn down and turned into like an unaffordable housing building. And
so, I thought a Halloween superstore, but that's
well, yeah, it's gonna turn into a Halloween superstore. Yeah. And they wouldn't give us a longer lease. I couldn't handle that level of instability. I already came from like a pretty unstable childhood, so I'm not gonna just like let my business be unstable too, especially in this way. And all the artists were like, we want to have a real place to work out of. And so we closed that facility in 2020. But to date, we have opened 69,000 square feet of affordable studio spaces. 23,000 is still open today. We receive these spaces as an in-kind donation from developers, and we do a little bit of work to transform them into affordable art studios. And so to date, we've had something like $3.3 million of in-kind donation from developers to be able to open and operate these spaces. We've served over 250 artists through our affordable studio spaces. And so the Artist in Residence program, really, we're working with developers to reactivate buildings that are slated for demolition as creative spaces for artists. So it works for us really well, and it allows them to get really creative, because one of the things that we learned is that artists don't just need buildings to paint on, they need spaces to practice in. And so that's why we started, you know, when we're thinking about equitable pathways for creatives to thrive, I was like, okay, it's not just money out, it's also affordable workspace, and it's also this, and it's also that. And that's how these programs just keep stacking on each other too.
Yeah. Well, you do make a difference in the city, and driving around, walking the streets, or even attending an event at the Shark Tank, aka the SAP Center, for those that don't know. There are many instances of Local Colors PDA in San Jose, public displays of art. Could you share some of those locations and how these locations are determined, and how can a custodian or owner of a location commission Local Color to create a piece?
Ooh, my favorite kinds of questions are these ones. Okay, so we have murals all through Santa Clara County now. We started just based in San Jose, and we've sort of expanded out because there's such a need for relatable and relevant public art throughout the entire county. So now it's sort of growing bigger and bigger and bigger every year. We do have a couple of awesome murals inside of the SAP Center, and we've worked closely with the San Jose Sharks. Local Color now, we curate the cultural heritage nights, the portfolios for the cultural heritage nights for the San Jose Sharks. So for like Women of Teal and Lunar New Year and Black History Month, we give them the portfolios for them to look at, and then they work with the artists to create the marks and things like that. So that's a really cool thing that we do with the Sharks. We did not expect Bay Area sports teams to be like sort of our bread and butter, but here we are. And now we work with the Sharks, we work with the Earthquakes, and we really, if anybody from the 49ers is listening, we want to work with you too. And okay. Just asking for a friend. But there are a lot of different areas that we are popping up murals in. We're doing temporary murals, we're doing permanent installations, we're doing vinyl installations, we're doing lighting and all sorts of stuff. I initially just thought we're just going to do murals, and now we do so tremendously much that I'm really glad I don't have to do it by myself. We have a team of eight who are now helping us move this boulder up this hill.
Yeah, so that kind of brings me to my next kind of part of what you're doing, and that's not only does Local Color have public displays of art, but you also employ local artists to lead various creative services for corporations?
Yeah. We call this new one our creative experiences. So it sort of is linking, I guess we believe that artists have full capacity to be able to dictate their own expertise and their own kinds of workshops. So like, we had corporations coming to us being like, can you do a paint along? Can you do a paint night? And we were like, boring. And we still do those. So if anybody is listening that had a boring paint night, that's okay too. but artists are capable of doing so much, you know? And, So we are we open up this program, and it's for corporate teams, youth groups, and community groups to come and experience the inherent joy that it is to create something. You know, we're all creative people somewhere in there, even when people are like, I can't even draw a stick figure. And I'm like, yes, you can. You can. It's a circle with a little arms. Like, it's not. This is not rocket science. So I think that everybody has, like, creativity inside of them. And so if we're just allowing artists to dictate the kinds of creative experiences that they want to give to people, then everybody's benefiting. So we have been doing this wonderful program for about a year now, and it's taking off too. And it has become like another, you know, from the executive director side, another serious revenue generator for our organization. And again, it's another thing we snip off 5%. We put it in a restricted fund, and that goes to fund, you know, East Side youth who are underserved when it comes to the arts, and groups who come to us that they don't have funding for it, or they didn't think that they had to pay an artist or something like that. We're like, no problem. We can do this together. So it's just, you know, working with the corporations has become a big part of what we do, and it's meaningful, and it gives back to the community because we dictate it so.
Yeah, so I take it that that was not an initial thought, you know, that you're going to be working with these corporations. Do you build that along the way?
Yeah, they just come to our workshops, and then I talk to them, and they're so nice usually because they're corporations. They're just like, they are what they are, but there's people there too, you know. And if you can make real genuine connections with the people who work in these corporations, then they want to do Moss art workshops, and they want to make buttons, and they want to do collage, and they want to do hand-painted brush lettering. You know, like, they want to have really interesting experiences. And I think especially coming out of COVID, when we were all just, like, stuck and couldn't see each other and had nothing to do except for watch Game of Thrones on repeat over and over again, you know, there's so much more to life. And I think it's like almost brand new again, the idea of doing an artist workshop or a workshop with artists. So if we have the opportunity to reframe and redirect, like, what that might look like, then hell yeah, we're going to do it our way. And it's going to be awesome.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah. Local Color has a youth empowerment series as well. It's called Yes. Is that
yes.
right? Yes.
That was when I was obsessed with acronyms. So
it's not a bad acronym.
Yes.
How is Local Color using its reach to empower the young artists of tomorrow?
Yes. Okay. So in our youth empowerment, we do this. It's sort of a budding program. It's like a program. It's like a half program right now. It can be its own thing. I just need the unrestricted dollars to make it a full program. Foundations. Nudge, nudge. And it can be its own standing thing, but right now it's sort of wrapped into our creative experiences. And we do this one awesome project called Color Me Rad, and I didn't realize that probably most kids don't know that that's like a play on Color Me Bad. So here I am saying Color Me Rad, and we issue a little certificate of radness at the end of it. But basically we have an artist who comes to us and they say, this is what I want to teach kids. And last year it was screen printing, stamp making, and printmaking. And it was so cool because the older kids got to do their own merch. So they did their own designs. They burned their own screens. They picked out their merch. They printed it. And then they sold it at a, you know, we had a whole gallery set up for them. So we're really trying to demonstrate critical life skills around entrepreneurship and creativity. Because, like, it's one thing to try to teach math, right? I go back to math because that was my most challenging subject. It's one thing to teach math, but it's another thing to teach budgeting for, like, a mural or budgeting for, like, a screen printing effort. You know, then it makes it fun. You're like, oh, if I have this much money and I have to buy this many T-shirts, and you're actually printing the shirts, it's like helping cultivate creative confidence and build necessary life skills for youth to be able to do these kinds of things. And we also pay our youth too, so everybody gets a shiny $100 bill at the end of it. Some of them never even, like, really seen a $100 bill, but, you know, we're really trying to change the paradigm, change the zeitgeist of what it means to be an artist in this area, and it starts with youth.
Yeah, I see. I see a bunch of our students at San Jose State, particularly in the radio station. They do something of that same sort where they do the screen. What is it called?
Screen printing,
and they are just, they love it. They come in there and they leave with something tangible.
So cool.
You know, yeah, it's a really cool, exercise and really gets people involved. So that's great, teaching the youth and getting them something I could take my daughters to. They might enjoy that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so when we were going to start this podcast right at the beginning, we kind of sent out a survey just to understand what our audience would want to hear about. And there's a lot of people out there that really want to know how they can volunteer. And can you just give us a little bit of background on how important are volunteers and how can our listeners become volunteers if they choose to get involved in your organization?
Awesome question. I think about volunteers a lot, and they are important to how nonprofits can grow. And I think about volunteer efforts when it comes to painting temporary murals or community murals or anything like that. We're going to have a number of awesome volunteer painting days coming up in the next couple of months, which should be really rad and exciting. So I encourage everybody to sign up for our newsletter on localcolorsj.org. Stay tuned to our Instagram, which is localcolorsj, and that's where we put the call out for volunteers. And your corporate team group can volunteer in groups of, 10 plus. We've got some big boys coming up. So that's one way that people can volunteer. Also, we're shopping around for board members right now, too. And we have a volunteer board, and they help us with our governance, our fundraising, and our advocacy. So we are looking for more board volunteers to join our wonderful, awesome and eclectic volunteer. And then I'm thinking of other ways. Well, those are two big ones. Yeah, committees, volunteers, committees, volunteer painting, board membership. Those are three good ways to volunteer with us.
Great. And then kind of the last question of the night. What is Local Colors' giving purpose?
Are you ready?
Yeah.
We got a minute here? Okay. As a founder, it's sort of hard for me to separate out my personal reasons for starting this organization, and it's hard for me to pull those two things apart. So they're intrinsically connected. And back in 2011, I have parents. And in 2011, my dad was 55 when he passed away. And then the following year, my mom, who was also 55, passed away in 2012. And so then I became the oldest person in my family, and I'm 24 years old. I have nothing. I'm bummed out. I have nothing left to be scared of. I have nothing left to, nobody to disappoint, nobody to impress, nothing. It was such a bummer time in my life that I was just like, I had to put that energy towards something else. And so I was thinking, man, if it's genetic, right? And if I'm going to die when I'm 55, I no longer feel that way. If that's the case for me, then I should do something more impactful, and I can be more impactful working for other people than I can be working for myself. And so that's why I really started the nonprofit organization, is because I had all this angst and grief, and I just needed to pour it into something good, because they just knew me when I was just out of college and bartending, and I wanted to be something more, and I could do something more, and it sucked all the fear out of me, and I just didn't have to, I had nothing left to be afraid of, failure. Everything was like, well, at least I'm not planning a funeral. It was sort of like it changed my scale of how I looked at the world. And so when I think about Local Color and its giving purpose, like, I think its purpose is to keep putting good out into the world and keep putting beauty out into the world and keep helping artists who are often marginalized and are sometimes some of the most vulnerable people in our community, from lack of housing or food scarcity or doesn't know where the next gig is coming from. Like, I really care for these people who are so tender, and they're so in their own hearts. And the sucky thing is that they'll do it anyways. They're going to make art because it's part of who they are. And I just can't stand to see that being taken advantage of. So To me, my purpose is to protect these people who represent such a they bring so much of the beauty into what it means to be in this city. So I think my answer to this sort of complicated question is that the giving purpose of Local Color is just to ensure that creative people in this capital of innovation, the capital of Silicon Valley, still have a place to make it weird and maintain creativity and innovation and able to do that all across Santa Clara County.
Beautiful answer. And with that, I think we're going to wrap it up. I don't think we could beat all that. But I think one thing I just want to say is that, you know, in this process of learning about nonprofits and how they get started, in that question, giving, you know, what's your giving purpose, it stems usually from some significant part of life that made you go, I want to do something more meaningful.
Yeah.
And we're finding that across the board.
How cool.
Yeah. So it really is a cool thing to come about, you know. But, you know, a lot of the things that make it happen are hard, you know. And it's a revelation within ourselves, you know, to better our opportunities, better everybody's opportunities. So thank you for being our guest, Aaron. Great conversation. I learned so much about Local Color. I hope our audience did as well. But thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate it. And if our audience is out there, get out there and go to a Local Color event. Find out more about them. I know we can see you. You did give out some of your information. We'll have that up on the video when we put that up there. But do you have any events happening in spring or summertime that we could look forward to, or maybe shuffle some of our people out there to?
Yeah. Well, definitely follow along for more in-depth details. But one of our favorite events and one of our fiscally sponsored project is called San Jose Day, led by executive producer Haley Cardamom, who was the third person I ever hired. And now she's off and running her own awesome thing. And so on 4/08, April 8th, we call it San Jose Day. That falls on like a Wednesday this week or this year. So it's actually 4/06. There's a big festival happening in Japantown in San Jose. And so it will be like just a real big culture fun day of celebrating in hopefully the sun, and come out and see the Local Color booth. We're going to be pressing some buttons, some custom buttons for everyone.
Beautiful. Want to give out your contact information again, your website, and how to follow you on social media?
Yeah, on the Instagrams, we are Local Color SJ. On the internet, the World Wide Web, we are www.localcolorsj.org. And you can reach me and all my teams by emailing us at hello@localcolorsj.org. Stay in touch.
Beautiful. And thank you again, Aaron, for being our guest
today.
Thank
you. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on Giving Purpose Podcast, and please click on the subscribe button to stay informed about new episodes. You can also find more information about Giving Purpose Podcast on our website at givingpurposepodcast.com, or add us on Instagram, Facebook, or Threads at Giving Purpose Podcast. You can also find us by the same handle on YouTube for some supplemental video content of each episode. We'd like to thank our guest, Aaron Salazar of the nonprofit Local Color, for joining us today. We'd also like to thank our co-creator and editor, Isabella Carino Hernandez, for all her behind-the-scenes work. We'd also like to thank our chair, Professor Nisha Gerard Patkar, and committee members Kim Massey and Gordon Gurley, for the continued leadership and support. We'd also like to thank you, our listeners, for your interest and contributions to our featured guests and the work they do to make their giving purpose effective in our Bay Area communities.
Thank you for listening to Giving Purpose Podcast. For more information, you could visit our website at givingpurposepodcast.com.